Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. It's Tuesday, the 10th of March, 13 minutes past the hour of 9 o'clock, and we have a great panel. Wonderful people assembled here to talk about the news of the day, and we are also hopeful that you will join us. Panel at WAMC.org is where you can write your short, to the point, and on-topic letters. We'd love to hear from you if it follows those requirements. Otherwise, we really don't want to hear from you. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Political consultant Libby Post is here. Good morning, Libby.
Good morning.
Welcome back, Libby.
Good to be back.
Very good to have you here. Very nice. If only for an hour, it's good to have you
here. I know. It's, you know, crazy time down at the Capitol.
I know. You're working, and we understand.
Yeah,
so you'll be here till 10 o'clock.
Right.
10:30, the governor's on, by the way. Oh. Programming note
there.
So I'm not missing a whole hour.
No.
I don't like the fact that you're leaving, and so I'm going to ask the governor about something that you really want to get done and prescribe that he doesn't do it.
Oh, then I'm not going to tell you anything that I want to get done.
Well, we're glad that you're down there fighting for all of us.
Even thank you.
Whether we have tails or not.
That's right.
All of us animals.
Right, exactly.
All of us four-legged people.
J.P. Miller is with us as well. He is from the Empire Report and a busy guy. Good morning. How are you, sir?
Good morning. I'm great. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you very much. Very nice to have you. Rosemary, I can barely see you over the microphone stand, but I know you're there. Investigative journalist Rosemary Armeo, good morning.
I'm here. I'm short, and I'm very worried this morning about the health of our chief executive.
So he could have gotten it. He might have been exposed
to a deadly disease.
Matt Gaetz.
Just when we most need leadership.
All right.
I was sure, by the way, when he came on to give his thing, that he was going to say, the first thing he was going to say, and this is all a bunch of nonsense, out of an abundance of precaution, I was sure he was going to do that.
I got tested,
and I don't have it. But he didn't do that, which means
he hasn't been tested.
Well, and
he doesn't have the results back yet.
And nobody would say, right? Nobody would say that whether he was tested or not.
Right.
I don't know. Yes. Former Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain is here as well. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
And WAMC's Alan Shartok. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Every morning I take my walk around the neighborhood here. You know.
And how'd it go?
It was fine. 3 miles. You have to look down all the time.
I came in, I was in about 6 this morning, and you were either already out. Were you out walking at 6?
No, I took a half an hour nap.
Okay.
I was on with Gustina very early in the morning.
Well, I heard that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, I heard it later.
But the post as you were recording, you said.
And then I took my 3 mile walk. I have another mile to go this afternoon so I can get the green line in my thing, in my app.
Oh, in your app. Excellent. So,
you do it in the dark, Alan?
No. I did that once. Okay. It was a disaster.
Yeah. You know, we're like just waking up and yawning, and these people have lived half their day already, you know?
Well, actually, I was out twice last night with the dog, so 12:30, 3:30. So we were sort of walking around the
same
time.
You're all nocturnal inhabitants.
Yes.
Not me. I slip like a rock.
I would say that none of you go to sleep when I do, which is at 7 o'clock at night.
No, that's true.
You know, I'd like to, though.
Yeah. Some days it feels good.
Yeah.
Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome. We have a lot to talk about, so we will get started. Again, the governor is coming on at 10:30, so we have about an hour and 15 minutes to talk about what is happening. Now,
there's nothing happening.
What?
And there's nothing happening.
Yeah, that's right. Well,
what are the futures? Do we know what the futures are in this time?
The futures are better. They're making up some of the losses from yesterday, but the coronavirus outbreak fan new fears of a worldwide recession on Monday, as well as an all-out oil price war sending stock markets spiraling down to a new record lows not seen since the financial crisis. The Dow Jones Industrial Average shed 2,014 points, or 7.8%, on Monday.
Wow.
The largest decline since the financial crisis. Stocks fell so sharply they tripped a so-called circuit breaker that halted trading for 15 minutes. Oil prices tumbled 25%, its worst day since the 1991 Gulf War, as the coronavirus weakens demand for fuel, with Saudi Arabia and Russia refusing to scale back production. So all of that happening yesterday. As I mentioned, the futures are just listening to Marketplace right before this program, saying that the futures were better. But we'll see what happens in the next, well, when the opening is in 12 minutes. So we'll see what happens. Quite a day.
Right now, it looks like the futures are up 3.5%. And I think yesterday.
What is that in terms of points? Do you know?
I don't know how many. Maybe 700-800 points.
Yeah. Right.
Yesterday, I think what we saw was the coronavirus, we all know, is going to spur a global recession. There's going to be less global consumption over the next 12 months than the previous 12 months. And because of that, oil futures went down. Saudi Arabia and OPEC wanted to lower production to keep oil prices high. Russia, who's not part of OPEC, but they kind of collude with OPEC, they say, well, we're not gonna slow production. We want to keep production where it is, which caused this this price cratering in oil, and saw oil go down to $36 a barrel yesterday. Oil futures down to $36 a barrel.
From
45, 60. Yeah.
And so these oil companies, these oil exploration companies, they are not profitable at $36 a barrel oil. So you saw some oil companies lose 50% of market value
yesterday. So what was on Putin's mind when he stuck his hand up in front of the Saudis?
Sowing more chaos in the U.S. economy.
Absolutely.
Is it simply to sow more chaos, which it certainly does on the economic front, but he's also cashing in. He's got lots of oil, mm-hmm. and he can kind of, jump in and undercut everybody else and get some quick cash.
So who is here's a question for you, gang. Who is the largest producer of oil in the world now?
The U.S., isn't it?
That's right. It's the United States, believe it or not, because as soon as we discovered that shale extraction business,
but that's no longer profitable, as JP was pointing
correct.
Out. See,
yeah.
that oil prices would need to kind of be above $40 per barrel for that to make economic sense, and now they're fearing layoffs and cutbacks in shale oil production in the U.S., and that's going to really hit the economy in some of the key states, and it's going to have a political impact.
Once again, we're seeing how our dependence on fossil fuels is undermining our economy when things don't go exactly right. And so you have a Republican Party, backed by the one remaining Koch brother, who is constantly trying to get the fossil fuel industry, as the main way of providing energy in this country. And ultimately, it's not going to work. Ultimately, we're going to have to go for alternatives. But the GOP has done a great job of dumbing down America, where they don't understand the connections. I think if you talk to average Joe on the street and say,
"Wait, watch it.
Do you want? I know. No. do you understand the connection between the virus, the coronavirus, and the fall in the economy?" They wouldn't understand it.
But according to the president yesterday, he helped clarify it and saying this is actually good news for consumers because gas prices will be lower.
Oh, sure.
They think it'll be below $2 a gallon in some southern states.
Yeah, but people aren't going anywhere right now.
Right.
That's right. So
except for that.
They can't afford a car.
Right. No.
Self-quarantine,
yeah. Right. And everything is closed down. So low gas prices at this time may not be the boom they would be at other times.
And a payroll tax cut?
Oh, yeah. That's,
okay.
Okay. And that's another thing. So the president came out yesterday at a it was supposed to be just the vice president and his team that are looking at the coronavirus. The president made a surprise appearance, came out for a few moments, and one of the things that he mentioned to help the economy would be a payroll tax.
So why did the president come out at the last minute unannounced? Because he is scared to death. That's why. Because this is on his watch.
Right.
He knows it, and he's going to get the blame.
This is going to kill him. This is going to kill him.
Well, he was floating a trial balloon, I think, by doing that, because it's not getting...
And he also seemed to be undercutting the vice president.
Well, what else is doing?
Stealing the thunder on the stage.
Yeah.
Well, that's right. The vice president is doing well by people's standards. Libby's making a frown. But so he comes out and says, I can't have this.
this. That's I put him there so he would take the blame. Now he's getting credit. I got to share in the credit.
Yeah, right. The other thing is that the idea of a cut in the payroll taxes. When they did the big cut, you know, a couple years ago, my federal tax went from 415 to 413 per pay period.
Yeah, that was
per week. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, really?
Well, you got more $2? Your paycheck, didn't you?
Yeah, $2.
Paul Ryan says be grateful for that.
Yeah, I know. It's a big whopping over $100 a year. Give me a break.
But does it work?
No.
I mean, does it work with the electorate? Does it work with voters? Does it work with...
Not when people's parents are dying. I don't think it's going to work this time around. I think that people saw that it was a ruse the last time because it didn't make their lives any better. Look, you're going to have people who are going to say, and I've been hearing this, CDC is the same thing as the deep state, and I'm not going to believe anything they say about the coronavirus. Okay, you get sick, see you later. But the rest of the country who are concerned about their children, concerned about their elderly parents, they're paying a little more attention.
Speaking about the vice president, I have to just say, he is a new study in obsequiousness.
What do you think?
In terms of the way every other word is as the president says, as this, that. It's unbelievable. I mean, it really makes me.
He outdoes Nancy Reagan.
Yeah. But let's not forget.
Do you trust the CDC, though? I mean, aside from it seems to me that.
I trust Anthony Fauci.
Yeah, that's true. But it's like the Weather Service.
Not the CDC.
The president is.
No, he's the National Institute of Health.
Well, he took a little bit of a dive. I think the guy's terrific. But his dive was when he said that they hadn't tried to shut him up.
They hadn't what?
Tried to shut him up.
They haven't tried to shut him up. They also asked him about Trump rallies specifically yesterday, and he said, well, I don't know. That's really up to the independent candidate of what they want to do, and if it's taking into effect who is coming to the rally and if they are part of the group that is most affected and if it's in one of these four zones in the country. So, you know.
What's he going to say? No, he shouldn't have them, and then he'll get attacked online by all the trolls. I mean, he'll get fired.
It's
a no-win situation for him.
Well, there is such a thing as integrity. You know that, Libby. Every once in a while, somebody becomes a profiling
critic. Rosemary, we cut you off. What were you going to say?
Yeah, I was saying, should we be trusting the CDC or NIH, for that matter, when we know there are federal agencies falling under the thrall of the president?
Yep.
And is it trustworthy now? Is the CDC being very careful and politically correct not to annoy the president?
I don't know the answer to that. I don't think any of us do.
I do.
But I am suspicious.
Okay, Alan. But the thing is this, if we can't trust what's coming out of the CDC, we can't trust anything.
Yes, that's my point.
Well, you got the Surgeon General of the United States who stands up there, and he's one of those guys. He's one of the Trumpistas. So, you'd have to go further down in the bureaucracy. To get the integrity of the regular civil servant.
Right.
It's also, I think that they, even if they were competent, I think that the federal government always, in these kind of situations, has a tough time communicating and looking good when the real battles are done in the states and on the local level. You know, I've watched Governor Cuomo's press conferences every day, sometimes twice a day.
He was great yesterday.
He's good. We're going to ask about it today. And one thing, JP, that is interesting is you take a look, and I've been thinking about this, you take a look at his background. He's been trained for this.
Yeah.
When he was at, HUD.
HUD,
he handled all of these crises, so we have the perfect guy in place.
He doesn't, Trump says stupid things, and that's one thing when there aren't people in the country at alert levels like they were on September 11th. But, when people are nervous, you watch Governor Cuomo, he tells people, be calm. The odds are that this is not going to affect you in a big way, but here are the precautions to take. And he sticks to his talking points. Mm-hmm. He looks like a leader when he's, when he's in these press conferences.
Not only that, I'm impressed because he did ask to come on here today, considering the fact that he's been on CNN. Every night in the rest of it, it's usually...
Yeah, he was on Wolf, what's her last name? He was on
Katie
New
Turr.
Day This Morning. Yeah, he was on with Katie Turr.
And I have to say that he's been good about that. He really, wants to speak here.
I think his making the hand stuff, that sanitizer, I think it's brilliant.
Yeah, but the prisoners.
And
prisoners
are now making hand sanitizer. 65 cents an hour to do that.
I get that, but it's about...
No, that's not bad.
It's about also about public health.
And the other side benefit is it has to annoy Trump no end.
No kidding.
So full of leadership.
Yeah. They even said that there was a... I think Pence said it last night, and I don't know the context of it, except that he was saying the support of the governors. I mean, we have at least the support of 47 governors, and I was wondering who the three were.
The same thing.
Jay Inslee is the other
Cuomo
one.
Yeah. And
Inslee the snake.
Maybe California.
Yeah. Otherwise, the three Democratic governors who are dealing with this issue the most, right? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. Well.
That was fascinating. Were you going to say something, JP? Okay.
No, but you know, Trump. Excuse me. When Cuomo came on with Trump Cuomo came on with Pence in the beginning. He was very nice about Pence. He didn't do anything to alienate Pence. In fact, I wrote a column about it because it was so interesting. Now he's being much tougher on the president. But you look, these are people who can take every penny away from New York State and have proven up until now in terms of travel and everything else that they'll do it.
But what I would say about Cuomo's attacks is he is not making personal attacks on the president. He is making policy attacks, yeah. Saying the CDC needs to approve Northwell Health Center to be a testing mm-hmm. center. He had that press conference, I think before midnight, the CDC had approved Northwell Health Center to approve those tests. So
yeah, because this president does not want to be the guy who is standing in the way of any kind of resolution to all of this.
Correct.
Also, we touched on this yesterday about, you know, why don't the president has said that he doesn't want, in regards to the cruise ship mm-hmm. that was off the coast of San Francisco, that if you bring those people in, then those numbers add up and it becomes more. The statement that the vice president made yesterday over and over and over again, besides giving the web address of coronavirus.gov, which will bring you to the CDC page, by the way. Mm-hmm. But the interesting thing I thought about it was he was basically, Pence made the point over and over and over again, look, these numbers are going to go up. Once we start testing, these numbers are going to go up. It doesn't mean that it's out of control. It just means that we now have a better picture of who is sick and who isn't.
Rosemary, I just want to ask you a very quick
yes,
question.
Sir.
I know yesterday we were talking a little bit about you're going on a cruise, having signed up for a cruise, and then we have the officials in the United States government, of all people, coming and say, don't go on a cruise. So
no, I never listen to the U.S. government about travel. If you listen to the State Department, Americans would never leave the country. They're extremely alarmist. And they should be. You know, you need to know all the dangers.
10 seconds.
We love you, Rosemary, and we don't want you to go on that cruise.
All right. You have until May. Figure it out. We'll be back right after this. Never a bad way to start off a program than listening to Wynton Marsalis. It's Black, Brown, and Beige Jazz at Lincoln Center Orchestra and Wynton Marsalis and their take on the Duke Ellington masterpiece. You can see the entire playlist posted online, wamc.org/roundtable. wamc.org/roundtable. Also, we welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. The Dow is up 929 right now.
That's not even half of what we lost.
Stocks gain on stimulus hope. So we'll watch that this morning as well.
We hope and a prayer.
Not a bad.
Well, how would this stimulus work? I mean, right now there's talk that there would be some relief on payroll taxes for the wage earners. But what the real issue is, if a lot of these people have jobs at places that shut down because they're not, you know, serving people in restaurants, the service industry is on hold because people aren't going to hotels or
concerts.
Yeah, concerts, people working at venues.
Events, anything.
That event, like if they have a basketball game in an empty arena, they don't need people to cook hot dogs and et cetera, et cetera.
Or sell them or eat them.
Jeopardy and Wheel of Fortune.
Without
an audience.
Yeah, I saw that.
Which will have an impact on the local businesses because people go and get something to eat beforehand.
I'm sorry, I'm so stupid. I just don't get that.
I didn't get that either, Al.
Studio audiences.
Studio audiences.
Yes, what about them?
The Jeopardy and Wheel of Fortune are going to tape without studio audiences.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. So, I mean, on a micro level,
yeah.
On those nights in the vicinity of Burbank or wherever they do them, there's a little uptick in the activity.
Right.
And that kind of activity is around every local theater, every local sports venue, even high school basketball playoffs and things like that. And if that all declines, the people that are going to suffer the most are the people who support all that. And, I mean, if they get a few cents knocked off their withholding taxes, it ain't going to cut it. They need to have payroll continued while they're while they're put on hold, because they're not going to be able to live. And, that's the real relief.
Think of what the economic impact would have been a week and a half ago if we were told that no one could come to the NISFA wrestling championships that were held here at the Times Union Center. There were thousands of people. Every hotel room was booked.
Restaurants were hopping. Hotel rooms were all booked.
Just think what the economic impact of that would have been, and that's the ripple that
will
happen.
I worry about the Berkshires. Think about what goes on there every summer.
Well, yeah, if this is a longer term. I mean, not from the life point of view, but from an economic point of view, this is like a slow motion 9/11 happening to the economy.
That's right.
And it's scary. And then fear breeds fear. And the next thing you know, people are reacting to the fear, and then it becomes reality. It's a tough situation. There was a guy at Moody's that was saying this is the beginning of a global recession, and a lot of people are not arguing with that.
I know we have letters. Do we have a lot of letters, or just
no? We don't have that many. But
So let me ask. Let me just ask a question then. I took umbrage.
Umbrage.
I just want to ask this question. I was going to put it down on our list of topics, and I didn't. And then now I'm going to just ask all of you. CNN decided yesterday that they were going to label this a pandemic. Now, the WHO, the CDC, the National Institute of Health have not labeled it a pandemic, but CNN has decided that it qualifies as a pandemic. And in all of their programming yesterday and today and from here forth, I guess, are going to refer to it as a pandemic. I see this somewhat akin to the National Weather Service deciding that they are going to, the Weather Channel.
The Weather Channel on their own.
Going against the National Weather Service and saying that they were going to have a different definition of what a blizzard was, and then they were also going to have new terminology and name storms. Does that help things when networks like CNN are being accused of dialing up the hysteria that suddenly you call it a pandemic?
I remember when we were having this very discussion about whether to call the president a liar.
Right.
Remember, we weren't supposed to call the guy a liar.
Yeah, well,
I kept saying he's a lying liar. But people who wrote me letters and
said no. There's a definition of what a pandemic is.
And haven't we met it? It's a certain number of continents that the disease has spread to. So wondering why the WHO has not been calling it a pandemic.
But
that is a story. But
exactly.
You don't do it on your own.
Not good for Trump.
That's
bingo,
right on, Rosemary. Right. But it's not it would not be the media's responsibility.
No.
It's to call them out on it, as opposed to just changing the word.
To me, the similarity is to use of the word genocide, which governments go out of their way not to do because it brings on legal and other consequences. So you see a genocide and they call it everything but. And that is a new story. And I think the same thing is happening with pandemic.
Wouldn't it be the same thing? Remember if a tornado hits, right? They will say, well, the National Weather Service has to determine if it's a tornado. That will then determine what kind of of funding they would get. Isn't that the same case here? If you have one news organization calling it a pandemic, no one else is calling it a pandemic, doesn't that cause problems?
I think it's really arrogant and dangerous, too. It's at a time when the media must be, like Cuomo, serious but not sensational. This, lends you to criticism and the perception that you are being sensational.
And not only that, but that you're trying to create news instead of cover it.
Right.
Which, CNN has been accused of.
Okay, I'll be the outlier. I don't think it's inappropriate for them to do that. I think it meets a lot of definitions of pandemic, and I think that's it. It is what it is. You don't make it up.
What one industry that's not going to hurt from the coronavirus is the media industry. They have since the virus has hit the United States, every media organization has seen their traffic numbers go up significantly just in the last 10 days.
That is not exploitation, though. That is the job of the media, is to calm down rumors and to spread information about important events like this. It's hardly that they're taking advantage of it. They're doing their job.
I think CNN kind of established itself as a reputable and important news agency during the first Gulf War, you know, Desert Storm, because they had all this coverage. And people kind of saw the value of having a 24/7 news operation during a very, very important time. And since then, I think they've tried to keep that role. But I agree with Rosemary. I think it seems arrogant. It inevitably... well, maybe it isn't inevitable, but it's likely that it will at one point. The World Health Organization is saying it's very close to declaring it a pandemic. And when they do, then CNN can say, see, we were right. We were ahead of the curve. But I think that is arrogant. I think their job is to report exactly, you know, what you said, Rosemary, is that it is reaching this proportion. This is the definition of a pandemic. They're not declaring it a pandemic. What are the issues? And, and you know, it's all about controlling the message.
It's also a really interesting story. Is there a committee that sits down and says, okay, we're going to declare? Do they take a vote? How's it? What's the whole process?
I think there's a guy named Jeff Zucker. Jeff.
Oh, you mean on CNN, but even
it's all about getting people to watch their network more than anybody else's. That's all it is.
Well, that's why it's bad, because this is where the media has to earn its job. The reason it has constitutional protection in this country is because it's doing a public duty. And information...
You mean it's supposed to be doing a public
duty. It's supposed to be, right. And I maybe it is. Maybe CNN is. But it certainly gives the impression of otherwise.
And I believe, if I can quickly pull up the press release, and I don't know if I can, but they were basically saying that they did the first line in the press release is basically, we don't want to stoke panic. But I don't know how you...
When you start a press release with that sentence, that's a big signal.
This is the first sentence. Starting today, you will notice that CNN is using the term pandemic to describe the current coronavirus outbreak. It is not a decision we take lightly. While we know it sounds alarming, it should not cause panic.
Well, but they're all saying that. I mean, every public official is getting up there, right?
Yeah, but they're not calling it a pandemic.
No, but they're getting up there and saying, don't panic! I mean, we know that...
when people say don't panic, they
panic. Don't panic.
Right.
Well, it is a tough balance. It's going back to, you know, Cuomo's press conferences. It's a tough balance to say people at 99.9% of everybody's going to be okay, but we should be very cautious and be overly precautious so that we don't spread it more. It's a tough message to give, and the media organizations have no incentive to give that. They want eyeballs. And
that's what they want.
I mean, the one thing that Rosemary was touching on, which I think is also a good point, is that when you look at this, there isn't really a good definition of what a pandemic is. It's a very vague definition. So, I mean, there is that, but...
Well, it doesn't seem that vague to me. It's like genocide. There is a definition of genocide.
An epidemic that has spread over several countries or continents, usually affecting a large number of people.
Where are you getting
certainly
that from?
It is. Yeah.
The CDC.
See, I was looking at World Health. Look at what theirs is,
okay,
too.
Well, I'll do that during the break. How's that sound?
Okay. That's your homework.
Okay. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Alan has letters. We'll go to those, and we'll continue. Panel at WAMC.org. The governor at 10:30. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC. Good morning. Welcome back to The Roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, J.P. Miller, and Libby Post. And we welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org.
Hey, Joe, what do you say I asked the governor today? Are we in a pandemic or not? What do you think? I think that would be a good thing.
The governor's line has been, we have an epidemic of a virus. We have a pandemic of fear. That has been his line.
Interesting.
Or he'll give you some other sleazy line, but it doesn't matter what you label it. Here's what we have to do, blah, blah, blah.
Why do you say sleazy? I don't think that's
appropriate. Yeah,
it slips out of the real answer, which is it a pandemic or not? So they just kind of ooze away from it.
Well, by some definitions, it would be a pandemic, and by other definitions, it's not a pandemic.
Yeah, nambi-pamby answer like that.
But he's not a healthcare expert. I mean, come on. you know.
Then why are you asking him the question?
Because it's an interesting question to ask.
And because he's definitive.
Hasn't the president been doing the Fredo and his brother thing?
Yes.
He's been going after Chris Cuomo on CNN and Andrew Cuomo
on his
Twitter feed. I'll
take your views under consideration. Here's a letter from Matt. Coronavirus versus Trump. Let it be noted that Trump once called coronavirus a Democratic hoax. All true. That's absolutely right. But once it affects Wall Street, the flimsy papier-mâché structure providing the foundation of his sham presidency, it becomes a huge priority that demands his dubious response. Excuse us, Mr. Trump, but we notice things like that. And that's Matt from Rosendale.
I just want to interrupt for just a moment to answer Rosemary's earlier question. This is from the New York Times. In 2010, the WHO has defined a pandemic as, quote, the worldwide spread of a new disease.
Well, that's a pandemic.
Well, that's pretty vague.
So it's a pandemic, though. It is.
Is a disease a virus?
Yes.
Yeah.
It wasn't the 2009, there was a spread of a, it wasn't SARS. What was it? Anyway, that
Ebola,
there
was a MRSA.
Nile.
Well, anyway, I'm reading some letters, okay?
Yes.
Is that all right with you all? Okay. And Chris says, Berkshire County virus response. I was disappointed in the interview that a Berkshire Health Systems official did with WAMC. I found it to be vague and opaque. I think they could learn a thing or two from Governor Cuomo. And that's Chris in Monterey, Massachusetts. Well, not having seen it or heard it, I don't know.
Vague and opaque. Interesting.
But people are being very cautious in the way they do this, mm-hmm. because if they're not cautious, they get accused, as this panel has pointed out, of being alarmist.
Right, and and this is not a time to be alarmist.
Yeah,
I think it's completely reasonable to be hopeful that it will not be a terrible, terrible expanding disease, and that people will, that it will be. Rebound after the weather gets warm, because in the southern hemisphere it's not as large down there, and as the weather does warm, it is not traditional, but it's common that these kinds of things abate somewhat. And when the president or any politician says we hope that when the weather gets warmer, it's reasonable. You just gotta draw the distinction between facts, and you have to react as if it's going to be the worst thing. You have to prepare as if it's going to be the worst thing, while you need to be optimistic. I think it's okay to be optimistic as long as you don't falsely secure people into being foolish and not being careful. It's a tough line to walk, don't you think?
Yes. Jan says, Biden interview with Rachel Maddow. Good morning, folks. Rachel has interviewed every Democratic presidential candidate except Joe Biden and has on air invited him. Instead, he interviewed with Lawrence O'Donnell last night. Why not Rachel? Damned if I know.
Yeah, me neither.
And then we heard from, who do we hear from here? Oh, yeah. We heard from Vicky in Nova Scotia. Would not the cone collars we put on dogs be useful? No way of touching your face.
That would be fun.
I put a great graphic up on the New York State Animal Protection Federation's Facebook page, which has gotten shared over 1,000 times, of a dog looking at a guy or a person whose head is totally covered by a cone, and the dog is saying, "Don't touch your face."
Well, it's so true because
it is true because
all of us touch our faces
all the time.
And the idea, I've been thinking of a new product, which is you put something on your fingers that really stinks, so that when you bring up
skunk essence,
something
you can
like
get
that.
Skunk
so
essence
when you bring your hand up,
you wouldn't do
the hunting store.
It would be like one of those bee.
Yeah, or like an umpire hands or something.
That's
a good idea.
Or a fencing.
Okay,
mask,
so Vicky ends by saying, "No way of touching your face if we got the dog collar. Sneezing spreads less, and you can see where you're going. Eating is a trick, but no more mindless snacking." Vicky in Nova Scotia.
Vicky, great letter.
Yeah,
we'd all be healthier.
And George says, Putin and oil. Hi, folks. Did you think President Putin senses Trump's likely defeat and has, quote, released the dogs, end quote, that he has been holding back because his tool in the White House is no longer useful? George, of Winston, Connecticut.
I think when we reach that point, we'll see the steel tape.
And Judy says, I'm with Rosemary. I might have confidence in the statements from the doctors, Fauci and others, if they don't start every statement touting how great Trump's early responses were about stopping inbound travel. So sorry, inbound travel. It's as if he's been told he can only speak about the virus publicly if he first praises the president. I'm terrified in capital letters.
That's exactly what happened.
But think about it. If you're a guy like Anthony Fauci, who's been a very, very stable and brilliant public health official for decades, you know, actually, and he
greatly respected
and widely believed. And if he doesn't pay homage to the president in his opening remarks, he's unable to get up there anymore and use his position and his credibility to get real, truthful information out there. It's a small compromise to make so that you can then tell the truth and properly advise people on what's going on.
Except if the president then contradicts him, which he has wont to do, the mass of the people who are they going to believe?
I know who I believe.
Fauci. Yeah. Right, I'm going to believe Fauci, but you've got all these people who think, you know, Trump is right out of the gospel.
But what Mike is saying is Fauci doesn't want to be fired. He thinks he has to contribute is valuable.
He
makes a decision.
I agree.
And he's
better on the inside than
on the outside.
He's between a rock and a hard place. I don't think he's ever been, since the AIDS epidemic, I don't think he's ever been so
stifled
with, you know, and bound up in knots to try to explain a public health issue.
I don't think
you spent 27 years in federal government without learning how to be diplomatic and suck up to higher authority.
Yes, however, people in public health, there's always been the recognition within government, no matter what parties in charge, no matter what administration, that public health trumps politics. And this isn't the case now.
No, that's true.
Sherry writes, what is a payroll tax cut? Good morning. We enjoy this program very much. Now, that is really a lovely statement. It's not, hooray for you guys. We love you. We enjoy this program very much. I love that. Very nice. Oh, wait. So
a payroll tax,
I'm finishing the letter, please.
What is
a payroll tax cut? A reduction of taxes owed or just withheld? Well, we withhold them here. I know that, right?
Well, it's
on the paycheck.
You withheld
the federal tax.
And then you pay it into the, you pay it to the government.
That's right.
Yeah, that's what your withholding taxes are. If you look at your paycheck, you've got federal withholding, Social Security, Medicare,
FICA.
And state tax. Right, FICA.
Right, but it's based, the withholding tax is
based on
your
income.
Your salary at that particular place.
Right.
And in most cases, it's about what you will owe at the end of the year. So if they reduce it, they're reducing the amount of tax you owe. Now, some people have to pay more because they have other income. Other people have tax deductions that change it also. But basically, to lower the payroll withholding tax, you're basically giving a tax break to people, and that's the idea. But as I said before, a few pennies an hour that you might save on your service level job isn't going to cut it when you're without work.
Right,
that's what we have to do. We have to find a way to help small employers who can't afford to keep people on the payroll to be able to do that, or provide emergency unemployment insurance or something. You know, I mean, what we have to watch out
for. I saw a headline they're talking about a $1,500 one time for everybody. That's not
okay,
going to do anything.
Okay, but let me try to get to this, Mike. Maybe you can answer this question. If the withholding doesn't happen, that means the federal government has less money, right?
That's exactly
and
right.
That
well,
means
that's the problem.
And that means that our deficit burden will be even higher.
Right.
Yeah, they think that, you know, the people in Congress who are worried about this, like Chuck Grassley, I mean, they point out that it could create a $75 billion shortfall in the federal budget. Now, that wouldn't be so bad as a one-time remedy to an economic crisis. except we have this $1 trillion deficit that happened because of the 2017 tax cut that was really aimed more at people with wealth and at corporations.
All right, a few more letters and we'll go to break.
Okay, a friend went to his doctor. Turns out he has the flu. No trouble being tested for coronavirus. After discussing virus with his doctor, stopped listening to news coverage of virus. Personally, I talked to a cardiologist yesterday, and she said doctors that she has spoken to says the coverage of virus is counterproductive.
Well,
how so?
Russ says, well, so then you would have to talk to the Italians who have closed down the entire country, right? You'd have to say that is counterproductive also.
Well, would have Italy acted sooner and taken more bold, decisive action if the media had more properly identified the present danger?
Hard to say. I don't know either. Russ says, uncertain future. Given that the test kits began arriving in volume only yesterday and given that most people with a COVID-19 infection will believe that they have a cold and will not go to a doctor, it will still be a matter of weeks before we just handle on the prevalence of we just get a handle on the prevalence of this health threat. China made samples available for other nations to make tests in January. What was the holdup? Russ from Anans.
Donald Trump.
Frank said, coronavirus response. California Governor Gavin Newsom recently praised the Trump administration response to the crisis. Criticizing the dumb things Trump says seems silly when the actions he's taken are the right ones. No reason for Governor Gavin to lie about how well he's being supported when it would be easy for him to shift blame. Thanks, Frank in New Jersey.
I was surprised by that, too, that Gavin Newsom, you know, he's a
he's
not a Republican.
You think?
But he, in the past, has also praised the government while he's been sued by them, you know, over the homeless issue in San Francisco. He'll also praise them for some other things. And he speaks frankly about when they're working with us, I want to compliment them and I give them credit. And when they're not, I will fight them to the tooth and nail.
Yeah, Trump did shut down travel to China sooner than anybody else did. And that was an interesting step. He should get some credit for that.
Tyler says, stop applauding slave labor. Panel, I understand the urge to view Cuomo's decision to enlist inmates to produce hand sanitizer for 60 cents per hour as innovative. However, I would be remiss not to remind the panel, full of Democrats, that our country incarcerates people at rates that are internationally unique and historically unprecedented. Those affected by our nation's failed experiment with mass incarceration are disproportionately poor black and brown people and their communities. Okay. What you are applauding is modern-day slave labor, says this.
All right. We're going to take a break on that note. We'll be back. We'll continue. Libby, you got to go?
Got to go.
All right. Thank you very much for being with us. We'll try to carry on without you. We'll return after the short break.
We'll cover that half hour between you and Cuomo.
Okay.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Mike Spain, and J.P. Miller are the survivors, and we voted Libby off the island. And we're all here. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. 10:30 this morning, Governor Andrew Cuomo will join Alan in conversation. Let's go to the letters.
Okay, we got a letter from Mark who says, economic stimulus. Andrew Yang's freedom dividend would look pretty good about now. That what he wanted to give everybody $1,000 or something like that?
$1,000 a month.
A month?
A month. $1,000 a month.
Wow.
$12,000 a year to everybody, regardless of their income level if they were over 18.
Do you think he's going to run for mayor of New York?
Andrew Yang, is it being discussed?
Yes.
Yeah, he's got a new not-for-profit, I know, so he's keeping his name out
And
there.
Also he's on the CNN as a paid contributor, I believe.
Yeah.
I think he'd be he might have a chance to be elected in New York
City. You know why? Because the other candidates are not that hot who are there, the ones who are being put up right now.
Well, a guy named Bill de Blasio got elected twice, so pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, it's they have a habit of picking people they don't like.
Right, right.
People just don't like him. They go, I voted for him. I don't like him.
He was the best of the group. Carrie writes, the word pandemic. I believe there's a difference between a pandemic and a, quote, deadly pandemic. You can have a pandemic without widespread deaths, but this subtlety may be lost on most of the public, and that's Carrie in Gardner. You know, I think of Gardner, I know this is inappropriate, but I'm sorry. My old chairman, Herman Walker, lived up there, and one day I came, I said, I love those flowers you got there. He says, they're a pain in the neck. He said, take some. So I've taken some, and now my whole property is,
it's an invasive species now.
Yes.
Yeah. It's taken over the yard. Yeah.
Jerry says, greetings from Mexico. Cancellations. Until yesterday, my 5 employees and I were scheduled to work at a large convention in Philadelphia. Had it not been canceled, that city would have been a host of between 10 and 12,000 attendees at the end of March. That's a big, capital, big hit for everyone involved. Jerry from Rhinebeck.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's happening all over.
Oh, boy. Chris says, we had a meeting in my office this morning in which a whole bunch of people were discussing what we would do if we couldn't have a fund drive. Would the station be dead? How would we appeal for money?
Well, what would prohibit people from doing it online like
so many do? No, they would
not.
It would not. It would all be online. We almost got there this time, let's face it. Mm-hmm. Chris said, but of course you have to have somebody who will take the calls, somebody who will do the stuff. It all, one thing leads to another. Chris writes, coronavirus. Dear panel, in an overpopulated world, it is only a matter of time before nature, capital N, nature, finds a way to seek balance to a virus. More people means more opportunity. In essence, the more we grow, the harder we fall. That's from Chris.
All right.
Whatever. Okay, now we're going to read from Sasha, who writes pandemic. Good morning, panel. Just a note on pandemic versus epidemic. The COVID-19 is a pandemic in all but name. The reason the WHO is not calling it a pandemic is because the legal use of the term pandemic triggers a set of actions by countries which are not helpful in this instance as they are based on a flu model, mitigation versus containment. I believe there was an article about this in the New York Times recently. Keep up the good work, Sasha from Troy. Boy, our people know a lot. They really do. Okay, and then we heard from Jeff, who says, pandemic. Watch out, America. Trump may well use the coronavirus outbreak as an excuse to declare martial law, postpone the primaries, and declare himself president for life. Yay. Yeehaw. Jeff in Rome, New York. Well, you know, this is interesting because I know that our governor has declared that he has certain emergency powers now also. Right.
Right. Declaring a state of emergency enables the government to cut corners on rolling out programs and implementing new policies without going through the same, sort of approval process. It lets them act quickly. It does give an advantage in a time of an emergency. I don't think it means that we can bring in the army tanks and start ordering people off the streets. That's
well,
an exaggeration,
I
think.
Mike, I just wrote a column about this because I want to know what happens if the president, as a lot of people have been writing me saying the president is going to call off the election because of this. Okay, so what happens if that happens? Are people going to go into the streets with pots and pans? Is somebody going to throw a Molotov cocktail? I'm not espousing that they do, but at what point does this happen?
I would argue that the president of the United States does not have the authority to unilaterally cancel an election.
Well, what if he did?
The Supreme Court would then have to step in.
Even this Supreme Court
with Gorsuch and Kavanaugh and the others, I don't think that they would back the president on it. I think it would be an awkward situation, and I don't think it's going to get to
that. I think 41% of the population would say, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Great president. And the other remaining percentage would go on Twitter and Facebook and rant and rave.
But what would happen?
Nothing. He'd get away with it.
Well, if he gets away with it, that's the end of something, right?
And he wouldn't declare himself president for life. He would just say there's an emergency and we're going to put off
hang
footing.
Around.
Yeah. And then he'll just extend it.
And we remember after 9/11, as we mentioned yesterday, Rudy Giuliani tried that.
And did it work or no?
No, because Bloomberg was next up and he said, forget about it, Jack. Anyway.
And then he got a third term.
And then he bought a third term. Justin, pandemic. It's not up to a news organization to declare something a pandemic. Why do we have corporate-backed news? How do we take the incentive to scare people into watching the news away? D. Dear panel, says Peter, Berkshire County virus cases? Why are we not hearing a peep about where the cases in Berkshire County came from? Now, folks, I read the Berkshire Eagle this morning, and it said 5 cases in Berkshire County. Obviously, I wanted to know if we had one in Great Barrington where I live. The article did not say where these cases were. And I think this is a good letter because I think it's right on the money from Peter. Were these folks attending the Blogan Conference? Although the Biogen Conference, had they recently traveled overseas? People cannot make decisions about whether the virus is here and spreading in our community if we have no information. And local health officials are apparently hiding behind HEPA, HEPA privacy laws. Privacy laws, rather than revealing things that could be helpful to the citizenry. This is incredibly frustrating. Frankly, it's the wrong time to keep us in the dark. Thanks, Peter. Well, Peter, it's possible that the reporter for the Berkshire Eagle couldn't get that information. It was a very skimpy article.
Well, I know there was also the case in Saratoga County when it was first announced that the governor said that there were 2 cases in Saratoga County. What we didn't know is that until one of the people who was affected turned out to be a pharmacist in Queensbury, in Warren County, that
just
they
over
were
the river, yeah.
right over the border. They were looking at the they were starting to do the research, and they wanted to find people who were in that store on specific days so they could get them too. So I think there's like a next step before they can get, because I'm with you. The first thing we heard when we said Saratoga County, well, where is it? There's a big difference between, say, from Half Moon all the way up to Corinth. So where are you, and where, what distance is that?
I had real objections to what I saw in the Eagle this morning, which I read every day, and it was a very skimpy article, number one, and I think at least the reporter should have said no details are available.
No details, yes.
Right. I think that's a responsible thing to say, you know, that we could not find out the answer to these questions. I mean, that's just good reporting and good news writing, that you tell what you can't find out when it's an obvious question.
And it was initially in New York, Westchester County, and now it's zeroed in. People know that it's New Rochelle in Westchester County that is the hot spot. And I think that comes over time. I think it'll be made public what towns there are.
I have a great deal to do with New Rochelle, I can tell you that. And I can tell you that this will be attached to their name forever, I suspect.
It'll no longer just be known as the home of Rob and Laura Petrie.
Right.
Well, that's right. That's where they were from, right?
Yes.
And my Uncle Arthur, who was the town dentist. And my father, who had a business there. And we went there when we were both there. We weren't going to Fire Island.
On your way to Fire Island, did you stop there?
No, what's happening yet. Right. Crossing the Sound, getting to Fire Island.
Melinda says, warmer weather. How does the warmer weather have any effect when the virus is alive and well in all kinds of warm weather states and countries right now? I've been thinking about that myself. I think that's a very good question.
Well, we made fun of Trump, you know, when he said, oh, it's going to get warm, so by April it'll be all over. And yet there is some scientific truth. I'm sure he hit it by accident, but yeah, viruses tend to...
Aren't we all hopeful that he's right?
Yeah, we are. And so I've been looking at this, and a whole lot of it has to do with the fact that in warmer weather we're outside more. You don't catch it so easily as when you're in winter, confined, closed spaces in close quarters with others.
And that, I think, it will be the tipping point when we see at some point each day when we open the newspaper, turn on the news, we're seeing increased numbers in the United States and also in New York. When will that tipping point be of when we start seeing numbers going down? Will it be April? Yeah. Will it be May? Will it be June? Will it be September? You know, when
the weather begins to cool again, will it
come back?
Flu season, will you see this strain of flu? And maybe by then, although it seems like it's pushing it, they may have some kind of vaccine to protect people.
Or treatment.
Better treatment.
We don't even know. We were talking about this yesterday on the show. We don't even know whether this is a disease that you get once, get over, and then it comes back.
Right, like whether it has immunity.
Does. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Margaret says, pandemic. My husband and I, recent transplants to Vermont. Welcome, citizens. I say that, have planned a trip to St. Louis, Missouri for several birthday celebrations and social gatherings.
Just had an outbreak.
What'd you say?
They just had their first case out there.
Well, that's not an outbreak.
No, I'm correcting myself. You're right.
Our departure was planned. Our departure was planned for Thursday, and after watching Rachel Maddow last night, we've decided it's not smart for us older people to fly. Both of us are over 70. We are very disappointed, but I take the situation very seriously now that I have heard what the CDC really thinks.
Yeah. It's important to remember, too, that, and that's good advice, but there's been 30, as of this morning, there were 35 deaths associated with COVID-19 in the U.S.
Is that right?
19 of them were related to the nursing home in Seattle.
Yeah, in Washington. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's still a lot more information needs to happen and a lot of time needs to go by, relatively speaking, to before we really know the extent of it.
Yeah, 35 deaths. How long does it take to get 35 deaths on a highway in New York City, in New York State? Robert says, conceptual distinctions matter. Good morning, panel. So we can dither. I love that word. So we can dither. Give me the name of a guy, a cartoon character named Dither.
Yes, in Bumstead, that's Mr. Right. Dither.
Mr. Dither, yes, yeah.
Blondie. Okay.
Blondie. Oh, God, Blondie, you guys Dagwood. Are showing our age.
So we can. No, it's still there.
Yeah, it's still
yeah,
around.
Yeah, but it's not read now.
No,
except well, it's, by I us. Mean,
well, it's not read by us, perhaps, but it still has somewhat of a nice humor. Like,
well, first of all, speak for yourself. I read it all the time.
But I read it.
Gosh.
Remember the one where Dagwood would walk backwards from the water cooler, so Mr. Dithers would always think that he was heading back to his desk.
Look what I have set off. Oh my goodness!
I also
was a chicken young.
I
right?
also read Gasoline Alley. And that is almost completely crazy. All right. Robert says, so we can dither about the linguistic difference between a pandemic and an epidemic. That's dithering. But what matters is when the medical science experts determine there's factual basis to apply the concept. Here's a concept for you all to discuss, a concept used this week by WHO in response to dissemination of pseudoscience and factoids. Infodemic. The viral spread of bad info. Wash your hands. Robert in Saratoga.
That is the risk of even us just casually talking about different aspects of this, that we might misstate or overstate an incorrect fact, something, portray something as fact that's incorrect, where it was correct this morning and then it gets corrected by the CDC and we haven't heard it yet. So the writer, I think, is... good to warn people to get a lot of sources of information and don't at least be open-minded to how that will change and evolve, because it will, and it has, right?
And Matthew writes on this subject, not surprisingly, a pandemic also. Esteemed panel, 2 weeks ago, Reuters reported that the WHO will no longer use the phrase pandemic. They used to use a six-stage system to classify disease, with pandemic being the highest stage. This year, without explanation, they moved to a new system with epidemic being the highest stage. And that's Matthew from Queensbury. And that's all right. I got, Joe.
Excellent. Let's go to what else is happening today. You know, they're calling it Super Tuesday 2.0. It's happening today, and it is the biggest of the prizes is the state of Michigan. And, of course, this is after last week's Super Tuesday, which was a very good night for Joe Biden, and winning 10 out of the 14 states in which he competed. And now the question is, how will... how will Joe Biden do? But ultimately, how will Bernie Sanders do? Will he be able to turn any tide?
I want to fight with Rosemary. I want to pick a fight with Rosemary.
Okay. Oh, great. I always enjoy that.
We have 8 minutes before the governor comes on.
Is a fierce defender of the press.
I blame him, too, for lots
right,
of things.
Right, right, right. Okay. And here's the thing of it. The polls are showing Biden 19 points ahead. 19 points. That's a lot.
In Michigan.
Yeah, in Michigan. But, Joe, what's interesting about this is that this doesn't serve the needs of CNN and the press. They are saying, and the headline is always, will Bernie Sanders rise again as a result of this?
They want to fight.
Yeah, they want to
fight. They want to prolong the fight.
Right. Now, that's not responsible. Is it, Rosemary?
No, it is not. I'm not sure that's what they're doing. The press gets criticized for running all politics, presidential politics, as a horse race. But at this point in the Democratic primary, that is the story. It's who's going to get it, Biden or Sanders. And there was a big upset on Super Tuesday, and now will he be able to sustain that, or is there another surprise? That is the story. So I do not blame them for covering it that way.
The headline out of CNN this morning was, if Biden wins Michigan, is it all over for Bernie Sanders?
Wouldn't it depend on how big he wins it? If it's really close, now with a 19-point lead as going into it as of this morning, if he only wins by 1 or 2% and it's very close, doesn't that give a little bit of life to
and not only that, when Bernie took on Hillary in Michigan, he wasn't supposed to win, and he did.
Right.
I watched Bernie. Bernie was on every single Sunday show this weekend, and he was tough on Biden, but he had a different message. He said, you know, I'm going to support the nominee. He said, I'm not a masochist. I don't want to just punish myself and be in here till the end, just to be in here till the end. So when I heard a different tone at him than I have in the past, I think you could see Bernie getting out of this earlier than he did against Hillary and supporting Biden.
Well, he also made a big press that the establishment had put pressure on Amy and Mayor Pete to get out. And they had such a great, hardworking campaign, and then suddenly they're out and they're supporting Biden. And then Buttigieg responded, no, it actually was the voters who made me think this, not the establishment. So he's still got his thing going against the Democratic establishment.
Yeah. But with against Hillary, they were close contests in most states where he was picking up a significant number of delegates. If Biden's going and blowing him out by 10, 12, 15 points in all of these states, that does, I think...
You think that's different.
I think it presents a different reality for him and his supporters as to why he's doing this.
The Detroit Free Press shows that there is a 24-point lead for Joe Biden over Bernie Sanders in Michigan. In Washington, it is neck and neck. Biden has a narrow lead in Washington, only up by 2 points.
That's the next highest. Yeah, that's 89.
Which is incredible. Delegates.
Missouri.
Well, didn't Hillary have a similar gap when she went up against Bernie, too?
Well, that was the point I just tried to make, Rosemary.
Yeah, I think you're right about that, Alan. Yeah.
Missouri, Biden is up by double digits. He has an 18.6% lead, according to Real Clear Politics. Biden is favored in the state of Mississippi. And then there is Idaho and North Dakota, where there is not clear polling.
Yeah,
but there's only 34 delegates between the two states.
Yeah,
that's an interesting point you're making, though, JP. That he might be induced to get out earlier than he did last time. And I had been thinking, no, he won't get out till the end because he didn't last time. Even after it was clear, Hillary had won.
But Rosemary, I hear you. This is his last hurrah.
Yeah,
this is a time when you're going to be fighting for how people will remember you.
Yeah.
Well, it's also his opportunity, how he plays this, should he lose big tonight and he has, no chance of getting the nomination. How he plays his exit could get some compromises from from Joe Biden.
That's what he's going to say.
On how his health plan is going to work or what he's going to do about it.
Don't you think he could get those concessions right now? Yeah. Just already on the strength of what he's done.
Well, there is. I believe it's March 15th. There's a debate scheduled, and I do think Bernie at least wants a crack at Biden one-on-one. Biden benefited from those last two debates. He was not attacked. Everybody was attacking Bloomberg, so he kind of skated through. And I do think Bernie wants one crack at him on a one-on-one debate. And if he still doesn't do make inroads after that, I think you could see him
Saturday or Sunday night or something.
I'm worried about that.
Sunday. It's in Phoenix, I think.
Yeah, Phoenix.
I'm worried about that because I do think Bernie is a stronger debater. And so, again, it's another act of Bernie to hurt the party. To show up Biden at this point who does that help?
Well, yeah, Biden's stamina in a debate, you can see if
he's going to have to. Well, there's a debate scheduled at Notre Dame in September between whoever gets the Democratic nomination and Trump. So Biden, if he can't handle Bernie, he's got to get ready for. It might help him get ready for Trump, you know.
Well, I'm.
I don't know. There's like some true animus between Biden and Trump, and Trump has been attacking his family. I don't think with adrenaline and anger he'll have any trouble against Trump. It's different against Bernie.
Well, he's even been. I don't know. You heard the clip of him saying where he was saying to Bernie, you know, Bernie, I'm going to come. He was answering these questions that were brought up in Senator Sanders' negative ads that Biden was bringing up. And he kept on saying, you know, Bernie, I'm not going to do this. You know, Bernie, I'm not going to do that. It seems like he has enough to anger or push to make it through.
Well, Biden now is now – him attacking Bernie doesn't get him anything. He needs to keep the fire
that's
on
right.
Trump at all times, and that's what
right.
presents a challenge in
that
debate.
Yeah, but if you're in a debate,
but
you got to go after him.
Trump is a convenient excuse when Bernie attacks him and goes, what do you want? What Trump has? And he can always portray himself as much better than Trump and kind of kiss off what Bernie's criticizing him for.
Biden was also really – do you remember personally hurt when Lindsey Graham, with whom he's had a close association for decades,
yes.
in the sentence, suddenly, because now he's, you know, attached to Trump's backside, starts attacking Biden.
What?
Do you remember that? Do you remember
yes.
that? And I think this is very similar. You're putting Biden in a situation where it's party loyalty, a great ambition. It's just fraught with
difficulty.
And
he needs
for him.
Sanders supporters
he
to
does.
Turn out for him
there
in
you
November.
Go. That's
he
the last
needs
part
them.
Of it. Yep.
Well, you finally taught me something, Rosemary, that I will never forget.
Uh-oh.
Attached to somebody's backside.
Well, I can't say what I really want to say.
I got what you meant.
You got what I meant. I am a success with that, then.
So we're waiting for the governor.
Oh,
so
yeah,
not on yet. And so we look to tonight's results. Anybody want to give predictions? What do you think?
Well, I think it's going to be a big night for Biden. That's my prediction. It's not a big. I'm not going out on a limb, but I think Biden is now the presumptive nominee. He is not the front runner in the Democratic primary. He is the presumptive nominee of the party, and he's got to act that way.
Extraordinary.
Which is
that
what
it
we weren't.
This way.
We were not saying that a week ago.
No. Well, maybe a week ago, but maybe 10 days ago we were not.
That's right. Not before
well, that's
Super
right.
Tuesday.
South Carolina, correct. Yeah, but Super Tuesday, I mean, still we thought it was going to be a fight between the two, and it certainly
very,
is.
Very quickly,
changed.
Let me just say that I've interviewed, Sanders any number of times and you know, a lot of times. This is a guy who truly believes what he believes and what he says. This is not some guy who's saying it just in order to get over. And that is why when we talk about his walking away before the last debate or the other stuff, he probably won't do it because this is what he believes and he thinks it's very important to do it.
Yeah, he is a real believer. I mean, I think that's part of the danger. It's part of the distaste I have for him, that is more important to him than getting out Donald Trump, which for most Democrats is the number one goal.
Yep.
I was going to say the fear is that if he were to get into a position of power and be elected, he wouldn't compromise from those beliefs and that he would just have as, you know, frozen a stalemated a government.
As he's had for 30 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's worth noting that Sanders in his stump speech has said, look, Joe Biden is a good man. He will be a good president. If he were to win, I would support him fully. And that is much different than what he was doing a bit ago.
Definitely. And I think that's a huge benefit of Biden's candidacy is he is just a likable guy, you know?
All right. We're out of time. My thanks to everybody. Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, and J.P. Miller. Thanks also, of course, to Libby Post, who was here earlier. When we come back, it'll be the governor of New York State, Andrew Cuomo, with Alan Chartok. We'll be right back after this.